Welcome back to the Weekender on Y95. I'm Kevin Northup. We continue to look back at last Wednesday's community conversation on healthcare in Yarmouth. A big discussion point was around a lack of mental health support in rural areas. This mother detailed a heartbreaking reality with the loss of her son.
He was admitted December 23rd for less than 24 hours, not diagnosed, medicated, and no follow-up. I couldn't get the family doctor to follow him up. Our mental health care needs to be in the community, and we need a mental walk-in clinic like you have in Halifax and Cape Breton. And why is there West Nova Scotia always the last to get in? The doctors were given money not to see their patients. They got like $110,000. My son died because he never accessed an appointment. Have you ever had to go and take your child and do CPR on them? That's what I had to do. Me and his father. That we have to live every day of our life missing him and knowing that he didn't get the care that he needed. Mental health is true. You fellas have not said anything about mental health. We need mental health in the community, and we need peer support. It can be any way that it can be done, but it needs to be done. And if we had that address, we would have less drug addiction, because that problem's true.
First, I'm very sorry to hear your story, and I absolutely applaud your courage for standing up and telling us today, because that takes a lot of courage to do that in this forum. No,
I'm not ashamed of what he did. I'm ashamed of the healthcare we got.
Absolutely, but I do. I want to applaud your courage for telling that story today, because I'm not sure that I could do that. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. You're absolutely right that we need to deliver mental health services in a different way. We do have now one of Minister Thompson's colleagues, Minister Brian Comer, is the Minister just of Addictions and Mental Health. That's solely what his responsibility is. And one of the things that he's been mandated to do is look exactly at this issue of how we provide services in a universal way. So we've tended to think about mental health care as inpatient, psychiatric, kind of higher levels of care that we need. And sometimes people do need that care. And when they do need it, it does need to be ready and responsive for them. But there are also lots of things that we can do in the community with our community-based organizations, with organizations that are already in existence. So we're doing a number of pilot projects right now that are starting exactly for that. So that when people perhaps, you know, as they start out, if they're struggling a bit and need some help, to your point, there's peer support, or there's social workers available, or there's other clinicians who are available, so that hopefully that it doesn't progress to a place where they need to get more psychiatric or hospital care. So you're absolutely right. We are looking at, and so we want people to understand, universal mental health care is about a whole continuum of care, from the very early stages until to very acute illness.
It makes me very angry when I see depression is treatable, when you haven't got the doctors on board.
A local youth worker was next to share her experience in trying to find help for one of her clients.
A glaring gap I want to highlight today, which we have been dealing with a very complex case since October of last year. Nowhere in the province, except for the AIS program at the IWK, accepts anyone for inpatient mental health care under the age of 19. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna cry. Because this youth that I'm specifically thinking of, a 17-year-old, because they don't have a permanent address, they can't be admitted to that program. There's nothing else. They can't come back to shift, because we can't help them. They don't fit our mandate because they're addicted to drugs and they have many other mental health issues. My question is this even on anyone's radar, this glaring systemic issue? This youth is 17 years old, living on the streets of Halifax right now. So I just want to know if anyone's thinking about inpatient services for homeless youth under 19.
So I'll start. It is on our radar, absolutely. We're working across government, and there's a number of things. So we work very closely with Minister McFarland, who is the Minister of Homelessness, and Minister John Lohr, who's the Minister of Housing, to your point, looking at supportive housing models and supportive housing meaning not just the structure, not just the place for someone to live, but actually wraparound supports for individuals living with addictions and mental health issues, relationship issues in family where it really isn't safe for them to be home, and how do we navigate with them. There's a ton more work to do, absolutely, but there has been some early successes. There's also some work happening across departments with anti-poverty work, so really looking at the determinants of health and how do we support folks, because really, sometimes I say I'm the minister of the healthcare system and all of my colleagues are the minister of health, right, around education and economic development and you know, all of the different departments is a piece of health. And so we are working, we know that homelessness is significant and it's not just a city problem. We know that rural communities are struggling as well. So there's been some grant funding that's happened. We are trying to lean in. It would be great to speak with you and see if you're connected with people that may be able to support the work that you do, because I think there is opportunity and we want to continue, but Janine, there may be more.
The mental health of burned out healthcare workers was also brought forward.
Mental health, but a slightly different perspective on it. How do you specifically intend to address mental health care for our providers to help reduce burnout and stress relief and career changes because of it?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you that our minister is very much, this is on her radar. So you start and we'll chime in.
Yeah, so I think there's a number of things. I think, you know, when we look at There's a couple things I think about. We think about those very stressful events that happen and how we deal with that as a team, right? So if there is something that's happened, a significant critical illness or a critical accident or something like that, so making sure that we have access to people to debrief in those situations and very clear access for psychological support in order to process and digest what people have been through, because it can be very traumatic. There's also the day-to-day grind of it all. There's the pressure at work. We all have a lot of pressure in our personal lives as well now. And so we do have some programs like EAP. We do have programs through professional associations. So as an example, Doctors Nova Scotia spoke about a program that they currently are working through with physicians called Bring Back the Joy to Medicine. So looking at resiliency. For us as employer, or as the employer, looking at the things that really grind folks, so giving people agency over their work life as much as possible, supporting them. I don't think there's one thing. So peer support, making sure there's EAP, looking at wellness activities. We know that work-life balance is really difficult for people in healthcare right now. We have a number of vacancies across the province because of the workforce shortages, which means that healthcare workers don't get the rest that they need and deserve. And we're aware of that. And that's, you know, where travel nurses can be a double-edged sword. We bring them in order to make sure that our shifts are fully staffed and that the staff are supported or that they can get a break. But it's also difficult to see somebody that's not from your community that's getting paid a different rate for working alongside of you. So we hold that with both intentions, working with unions as well to understand. So there's a variety of options and really trying to support people if they do have to go off, but ideally we would be looking at prevention. So I think we need to go right back to the education and talking to people about resiliency and self-care and how we build that into our education programs for staff as well. And I worry about all healthcare professionals. I worry not just, it takes a lot to care. We carry patients with us our whole life. And then I'm reminded that some of our patients carry us with them their whole life as well. So it's, I think there's a lot more that we can do, but it is on our radar, and we worry about the people a lot. We worry and we hear directly from them.
Next, the focus went to the emergency room, not just in Yarmouth, but across the province. One woman detailed her poor experience in the ER here, with people walking out before they could be seen, and also asked about a redevelopment of the Yarmouth emergency room, which was announced in 2020.
So, am I greatly disappointed? Yes, I am. but I didn't expect this. I didn't expect you to sit there and say, oh yeah, by the way, in February, this is coming, or down the line, this is coming. We're working on getting nurses. Or to have someone retired stand up and say, hey, I'll go back. I'm a veterinary technologist. I could go back. Yeah, this is very, very sad for our community. I have a friend who's waiting for a hip replacement 3 years.
So thank you for sharing your experience, and my apologies for being so
negative. No, there's no more apologies. There are no more apologies. No. Not seeing what. There were people that were actually leaving that were probably worse condition than me because they just couldn't wait anymore. And for me to hear, oh, there's no doctors here.
So to update your question on the redevelopment, I can tell you, and I'm going to look at Tracy, so she'll confirm with a nod. So we have been working on the redevelopment. So the funding that you describe, that Yarmouth received, there has been a team of both operational and clinical leaders that have been working really hard together with redevelopment staff, and the conceptual design for the new space is complete. It has been submitted for review and approval for the next phase. So the site is not only very committed to improving the Yarmouth ED.
Do you have a date? A date. I need a date.
Yep.
I don't know, this is happening and we've done this and we had a team do this. We need a date.
Yeah, so maybe what we'll do is we'll take your name and telephone number.
No, you need to let anybody know because everybody would like to know.
So maybe what we'll do is we'll post online where the questions and answers are, what the timeline is. Tracy can speak to the nuances of the date. She's co-leading the team here, but we can provide you some details for certain.
So the schematic design is going back to government probably April 1st, and it'll have to go to the registry then to look to get funding for the actual build piece. But we have engaged teams, Paul Legier, who's the physician lead, as well as some nurses. We actually toured some EDs around the province to make sure that we looked at what are going to be our needs for the next 10, 20 years from an emergency department point of view to plan appropriately and to make sure that we're, thinking ahead so that we can provide the care that's necessary down the road. So in April, it should go back to government for consideration.
So when is it? But wait a minute. We were told about this emergency and the money before COVID.
So the money was for the functional design and a schematic design. It wasn't for a build. So there's different phases.
I think that was misleading to the public then, because we're all waiting.
When we know more, we'll certainly share more. And what we do know now, we'll make sure is communicated in the Q&As on the website for certain.
The conversation about ERs continued.
But my question is, what's going on with the ER? With all the brains that I saw here today, to me, somebody is missing the boat somewhere. Because the ER, there's a lot of people that don't have any doctors. They have to sit at the ER and take the patient the time and a patient of a nurse practitioner, a doctor, why don't you have a nurse practitioner trained in this field to go in the lobby of the hospital one day a week to eliminate the impact of people in the ER? To me, that's not a big brainer. Why can't the Department of Health do something more sensible?
We are.
I'd like to see it.
No, we'd like to see it too. So we did have a big announcement about some ER improvements today. So you're right. There's a couple things there. We absolutely want to include nurse practitioners, and also in some ERs, we can also include physician assistants. And what we know from the data, and certainly Karen's welcome to correct me, is that around 60% of the patients that are seen in the emergency room could actually be seen by a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant. So we do have some significant workforce issues. In order to be a nurse practitioner, you have to be a registered nurse first and then you take on training. So we do support registered nurses in the province to bridge and become nurse practitioners. But we do have an absolute shortage. One of the things that that has recently happened, I think it was the spring legislature, we actually allow nurse practitioners to admit to hospitals We're only one of the only jurisdictions in Canada that allow nurse practitioners to do that.
I see lots of excellent brain here, lots of excellent plans, follow through being the crucial thing. I am a retired nurse, so I have spent many, many years listening to plans and not seeing the follow through. So that is the important thing, is not the talk, but the action. My question is about, I just read it this morning actually, about the patient advocates and the care providers in the emergency departments. So just a little more information about that role and, you know, what qualifications, etc. I see a perfect opportunity. As I said, I'm a retired nurse, but you know, I'm reconsidering that. But I don't want to do those 12-hour shifts and the night shifts and etc. I've been there, done it, put in my share of my years. And I heard a song on the way here today, and the title of the song was Somebody Someone. So in those emergency departments, everybody is somebody someone. And so I think that if you, it's a huge piece to fix the system. We all know that COVID exposed a system that was already practically in the toilet. So we can't fix it and in a short period of time, but I think being able to share information with those patients that are waiting, so those few staff that are in the background trying to care for them, they want to take that time to make them, to have those explanations. They don't have the time to do that. And so if you have those kind of people that have, can provide that, I think it just helps everybody cope a little bit better.
Exactly.
And I'm available.
Should brought the sign up sheet. So two parts. So before we came here, we participated in an announcement this morning of the deputy and two others did a technical briefing, and the minister and myself had the pleasure of doing the media. And we should really talk about it, because there were some bits that pertain specifically to Yarmouth, like the fixed wing. I'm going to let you talk to that. So the question dealing with the weight room care provider, clinical, and the patient advocate, comfort. So I'll speak to that first. So we've had in the province, you know, a volunteer program for many years. It manifests in different ways depending on where you are or what site and so on and so forth. So it went away during COVID, very unhelpful. Started to come back in October. Our volunteer patient advocate volunteers in the waiting room. But we need to take that to a whole different level. So I'm calling it professionalize our patient advocate. They could be volunteers, but they may not be. They could end up being paid positions. We want somebody in the waiting rooms focused on people's comfort. So it's water, it's a blanket, exactly. We want to look at you and see you and help you. You're there, you don't feel well to begin with, more than likely. So, you know, I was in the, I'm gonna come back to the specific answer, but it's such a good example. I took a little time on Saturday night and just went through the emerges in Halifax. I went to the HI, I went to the Dartmouth General, I went to the Cobequid. I live in Halifax, those are the three I went to. And there was a young fellow in the emergency at the Halifax Infirmary, and he was running. He was getting water, he was getting blankets, he was, can I help you, how can I help you? And I asked him to have a moment, and he was a first year student at Dalhousie University, and he was doing a 4-hour volunteer shift. And he said, you know, that man, he just went down to the vending machine and he spent $3 on water, and I have water. So what I'm gonna do, Karen, I'm gonna go make a sign now that says what I have and what I do. Okay, like, good for him. But he shouldn't have to do that. We should be doing that. And all of that should be on a piece of paper, on a chart that says, here's what's available, here's what our patient advocate can do. And not only that, by the time we're done with this, they'll have an iPad that can tell you your approximate wait time is whatever, X.
So, you know, that's not going to happen as of Saturday, the iPad, but the people will be in the waiting rooms this weekend. So that's on the care and comfort. They're not clinicians. They will not diagnose. They won't do vitals, none of that. So then we come to the second component, which is the waiting room care provider. And that will be a clinical person. And they are part of the care team, part of the team working in the eMERGE, but their specific role is to ensure that there's assessment, reassessment, making sure that from a purely clinical perspective, that there is line of sight to people in that waiting room. So that those are the two components. I don't know if you wanted to add anything else. So basically what we announced today was that's happening now.
Coming up, more from the meeting in Yarmouth on healthcare, and we'll hear from the leaders. The Weekender returns in a moment on Y95.